This is Sophie Seymour on May 26th, 2026, sitting down for an oral history interview with Amiel Katz. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Amiel Katz. I use she, her pronouns. I'm not a resident of Hudson, but I'm here for oral history summer school. I'm a poet, I'm a teacher, and a historian.
Where would you like to begin your story?
I think I can start with my childhood. I grew up in Houston, Texas. I kind of grew up as an only child, although I do have a half brother. He just wasn't in the home. I grew up with my mom, my dad, and my mom's mom, so my grandma. And definitely was a tough experience growing up. But I liked growing up from Houston. I have a lot of Texas pride. I really appreciate the diversity of the city, and just like you can always meet people who will teach you something new. So that's something I really appreciated.
What would you like to share more about growing up there?
Yeah, I think, well, there is this main mall called the Galleria. And they had an ice skating rink, and I used to ice skate. It was really fun. I loved feeling the cold air on my face and just going really fast. And it was really funny because when I learned to ice skate, my first lesson when I was very young, this older lady, she just screams at me and she's like, fall down, but like really loudly. And I'm afraid, so I fall. And she's like, see, it's not scary to fall. And yeah, it was, I liked that lesson because I think it kind of took away a lot of my fears about things. I think like ice skating is scary. You have knives on your shoes, but I like, you know, learned to like not be afraid of something that, you know, can be really great for my life, even though it's a little scary. Yeah, it's a little bit about that.
How do you carry that with you now?
I think, I carry it with my outdoors practice. I'm a hiker, a rock climber, ice climber. I love mountaineering, and I love the feeling that I get when I do something that's like a little scary, but the reward is so great. Like I think like one of the last times I went rock climbing about a year ago, I was in New Hampshire in the White Mountains, and I climbed up using a rope with some friends, and I climbed up and I just took in the view of the mountains, and I felt really small, and I really liked that. I felt unimportant, and like the things that I'm doing, they have an impact, but it's not gonna affect the entire universe, you know? And that feeling of like just made me be less afraid. So I think like when I relate that back to the ice skating incident, like I think about, you know, that one woman's yelling at me was scary and it made me feel small, but at the same time, like once you realize that you can kind of let go of everything and just enjoy being you. So I think that's kind of how I'd relate it. It was definitely a change going from Houston to Boston, where I live now. But I love Boston. I think being close to nature up in New Hampshire is just like life changing. And yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Life changing, how so?
I think as someone who struggles with mental health, I think being in the outdoors is necessary for me. It's like essential, and so moving somewhere where I could get to the outdoors in 2 hours, you know, be in the lush forest was just, it was just really helpful because I knew that like if I was having a bad day or like if I really needed to reset, it wasn't too far away to drive. I think Boston was also life-changing. It was the first time that I really left home, and my parents, they're very like tiger mom, like very protective in a way that I would classify as harmful. And so being in Boston, I got to have a little bit of space and really figure out who I am. And I think like that's just an important part of life, is when you have that space to really just explore your identity. And as someone who's queer and neurodivergent, I had a lot to explore and discover. And I was able to do that probably most recently. I am dealing with issues of contact with my parents, but most recently when I've had a little bit of space, I've been able to really understand like what my values and priorities are, and that's been really helpful.
What values and priorities do you find coming forward?
I think a big thing my dad always says is that like family is the most important thing, and I really hold that to be true, but it doesn't have to be the family that you think. Like, it can be your chosen family. And so I try really hard to prioritize those relationships with my chosen family, and like just demonstrate the type of care I wanted when I was growing up. So I think that's one of the values. I think another value I have is like stability. I want to be a stable presence in people's lives. Like, even if I am going through something or I'm struggling, I communicate and I don't, you know, act out because I'm upset or things like that. And so that's something that I carry with me. I think something else is also just acceptance, is that I carry with me. I think I've learned it most from my current partner, Jason. He has taught me what unconditional love and acceptance is in a way that I've never experienced before. And I try my best to be like him, because, you know, when I told him that I have autism, or when I told him about my gender identity, he just was like, okay, great, now I know more about you. And I think that's how we should approach things, in a way of like knowing more about someone, not being scared of the difference that it might create. And so I definitely carry that with me.
Would you like to explain the sound that we're hearing in the background there?
Yes, so we are currently in the sunroom of my host Jack's house. And the sneezes you heard were of my partner, Jason, who's inside. So yeah, that's what you heard. I think another value is community. I think that's something I didn't really grow up with. My parents isolated me a lot from community, or they wanted me to be part of certain communities I didn't agree with. And I usually, like, I'm Jewish, and I went to Sunday school, and I was, you know, trying to be part of that community, and I wasn't really fitting in, but I had that one friend who's also queer, you know how it goes. Like, you get that one friend and then you realize 10 years later you're both gay. We treated each other with such respect and kindness, and even though, like, I wasn't part of the greater community, I formed community with that one person, and we're still friends to this day. Those are values.
Would you like to share more about that friend?
Yeah, I haven't talked about them in a while, nor spoken to them in a while. They live in Oregon. She's so cool. Her name's Zoe Brown. She and I both loved being nerds in school. During Sunday school free time, we'd both just talk about what we learned, about mostly the history of Judaism, and then we'd both be like, why aren't there women dating each other? And things like that. And, like, it was just wonderful. Like, she got me, and now I see she does environmental justice work, and I'm really proud of her. Even though we haven't spoken in a while, I still see what she does on Instagram, and just from afar, I'm really proud. And she's kind of inspiring to me because she came out as queer, I think, during high school, and we went to separate high schools, but I really wanted to come out as well, and I didn't because my parents don't really agree with those identities, but I was just so proud of her, and I was like, one day I'm gonna do this, maybe not right now, but yeah, that's a bit about Zoe. Oh, I guess one more thing about Zoe is I love that she showed me that you can be Jewish and not conservative. That was huge. 'Cause I grew up in a conservative family, and she was like, yeah, I still do Shabbat. I still sometimes go to services during high holidays, but I do it on my own terms, and I follow my religion on my own terms, and I think that's really shaped, like, how I feel about religion, which is that, you know, you don't have to follow, like, all the rules and, or, like, the old traditions that maybe are outdated. Like, you can still have a connection to God or a higher power, you know, without having to compromise who you are.
Would you like to share more about the connection you found now?
Yeah, so I think a big part of being Jewish is questioning your relationship with God. And I think I'm in a place where I'm still questioning, especially with what's going on in Gaza right now. I definitely, you know, I don't know what to think because I don't agree with genocide, and, like,
I And we were just pausing there for a car noise going by.
Yes, but anyways, like I don't... I'm so against what's going on over there, and I read more and more about it every day. And it just makes me think, like, the connection that I have to Judaism is going to be one that's more, like, personal and maybe not as connected to community. At least right now, I haven't found, like, a community of Jews that, like, all believe in similar things that I do. But I'm hoping that I'll get that community one day. But for now, I'm saying it's more of like a person-to-person relationship. Like, I'll talk to someone else who's Jewish and we'll have a connection, and that feels like community to me. And I talk to God on my own sometimes. I ask questions. I don't really ask for much, because I feel like there was a long time where I was questioning God, and I don't like to ask for much because I feel like it's disrespectful. But every once in a while, like when Jason, my partner, had like a big thing coming up, I was like, please make this go well. So I would say that's my relationship. But I would say I have a very spiritual relationship as well. On my mom's side, she's not Jewish. We have some indigenous Salvadoran background, and I really do feel a connection to the earth and to nature, and just some spiritual like feeling of that I'm connected to something larger and both smaller to myself.
Pausing for another car. You were saying connected to something both larger and smaller. Would you like to say more about that?
Yeah, I think, like, you know, when I say something smaller, I think I just mean smaller beings. Like, I feel connected to the animals and to the fungi that grows on the trees and things like that. I feel a sense of, like, understanding in a way, which I don't really know how to explain. But with something bigger, I would say I feel a connection to ancestry and just the history of what's happened on Earth and my place as a person who can impact it. And so I think, like, I try to think of the things bigger and smaller than me.
Would you like to share more about that ancestry?
Yeah, so I think, like, you know, as someone who has moved, you know, quite a bit, I like to think of ancestry not just of family, but also of place. I'm a historian, so I love history. And so I like to think of who are the people who used to live here before me and what did they do? And am I adding to this history? Am I erasing some of this history? Like, I ask myself these questions. And so, being in Boston, I've done research on the Black communities of, like, Somerville, as well as the Latino communities of East Boston, and just, like, trying to find out more than, like, what we know about the Revolutionary War and things like that. And one thing I actually found out is where Jason used to live in Medford, there's this plot of land, and it's marked, and it used to be the slave quarters, and it's still marked to this day, and Medford has a lower income rate than Somerville, Cambridge, and Boston. So that's really interesting to me, and I think that, you know, sometimes, like, people forget, like, when they think of ancestry, they think of their family and their roots, but they don't think about the places they're actually on right now and how they might be shaping or changing it. And so I find learning the history really important. I'm moving to Illinois in 2 months, and I'm excited to dive into the research. I already found queer spaces, so best believe I'm going to ask people about what life is like. But yeah, I'm definitely curious, since this is a college town, how the college has impacted the lives of the people who lived there before, during its early days. It's also interesting because, like, Urbana-Champaign is, like, not, it does not have, like, a high income, but there are some areas that do, and so I'm just wondering about, one thing I like to study is borders, so I'm wondering about, like, different streets and how they can act as borders, and, you know, how do people separate themselves or bring themselves together, and yeah, because there's definitely, when you go, like, to North Champaign, like, the school tells you that there's the gang activity there, there's homelessness, there's a lot of issues, and I'm just curious as to what made that dividing line. I think also there's a big mental hospital in the middle of town by the college, and as someone who's been through that system, I think it's not doing a great job, because they just, once you're done with your stay there, you're just told to leave, and you could have been shipped from a different state, and so it's like, you know, you either go to the one hotel or this one diner that's right next to it, and you ask to use the bathroom, and then you're just on your own, and a lot of people become homeless, and so I'm curious about how the mental hospital could act as a border as well.
Would you like to speak about your experience with that system?
Sure, yeah. So I, 2.5 years ago, went to an inpatient facility for my mental health. I definitely had been dealing with a lot. I think I really struggled with autistic burnout, to be honest, and undiagnosed PTSD, and that just fueled so many things. And my experience was not great, because when I was in there, this guy was harassing me. And so I told everyone I was better when I wasn't. Then they let me out a few days later. And then obviously I wasn't better. And so I came back to the same facility, and I was like, do not put me in a unit with this guy. And then they did, and I couldn't leave. But luckily he was leaving that day. But it showed me that, like, you know, you'd think Massachusetts is doing a good job about these things, but there's still so many things that need to be worked out. I really think, like, a women's and gender non-conforming spaces are, like, important, and they're just, you know, the capacity's not there right now. I also had different doctors, and they told me different things, which was complicated, because my parents wanted to believe one doctor, and I believed the other one. It was just a little complicated. But I would say, I think being conscious that this is going to be in an archive, to anyone listening, it still can save your life, even if it sucks. So I think that it's worth it, depending on where you live and what it's like, because a few months ago I was in New York City, and I had run out of my medication, and my doctor wasn't responding, so I went to the emergency room, and I was like, can I have an emergency dose of my medication? And they sectioned me, and I was terrified. They didn't tell my partner Jason what was going on. They just left him outside, and it was really scary, and they made me change my clothes and just put me in a room, and I was like, you know, they took my phone, and I was like, what's going on? Like, I just needed a dose of my medication. I'm not, you know, going to hurt myself or someone else. And so that was really scary. And so I think place really matters. But I think if you're debating, like, your life versus, like, a really hard time, I would choose your life, so, yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. How have you found yourself making sense of it now compared to how you were feeling in the moment of experiencing it?
Yeah, I definitely think it was the right move for me. I think that mental health is so stigmatized, and I think it's so important, like, for people to know that, like, a lot of people really actually go through this. Like, there's a lot of people in the mental hospital, and it can be your coworker, it can be your teacher, it can be anyone, and I think people forget that, and that's something, like, I've been trying to spread the word about, I guess, in my communities, like, saying how, you know, people, a lot of people I know, including my parents, before me having these issues, were, like, people who are mentally ill, like, you know, they're on the outskirts of society, they're not, you know, welcome, and it's really, like, it could be anyone, and so I think there just needs to be more education about this, and, like, you know, it was so, it makes me think about middle school, actually, and how it was so rampant that people would, you know, say certain things, and, like, you know, make jokes of certain things, and I think, like, it's really hard because one day, like, you could be making those jokes, and the next you realize it's, like, it's about you, and you're going through this, and so I think there just needs to be more acceptance, as one of my values I shared earlier, of, like, people who are different than you, or people who aren't okay all the time, like, it's perfectly fine. You know, we're not all okay, especially with what everything is going on in the world right now. I think it's normal to be anxious and upset about things, or have even stronger, you know, disabilities or something related to mental health. But, like, I think, I don't know, I just, something, like, people need to talk about it more. Like, it's so stigmatized, and I'm like, once you start talking about it, you realize, like, it's, like, with the right people, I would say, like, it's freeing, because you can, like, with one of my friends, her name's Gracia, she also struggles with mental health issues, we have very similar ones, and, you know, if we don't text each other for 2 weeks, we know the other person's just, like, not having a lot of spoons, which is, like, a therapy talk for, like, not having a lot of energy, and we're, like, okay with that, but sorry, just pausing for a second because there's a weird looking bug. Okay, I think it's okay.
Are we okay to continue, or should we have a bug pause?
Maybe a bug pause.
We're going to have a brief bug pause.